Welcome, everyone, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League at BleacherReport.com, SportsOnEarth.com, Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report, and TheSportsDaily.com. I am joined this week, like every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Hey, what's going on?
Can you believe it's already heading into week six of the 2015 NFL season?
It is hard to believe.
I keep forgetting that it's week six. I keep thinking we're going into week five yet again, deja vu all over again. But no, it's week six, and the season is plugging along steadily, and a lot of things happening that we kind of imagined would happen, things like the Green Bay Packers and New England Patriots still being dominant teams year after year, it seems, and a lot of other things that maybe we didn't really expect, like the Miami Dolphins situation. They got their new head coach. We'll be seeing his Dolphins debut this week because the team was on bye in week five. But all in all, as always, an interesting season shaping up.
Sure. I mean, we certainly didn't expect the Lions to be 0-5 at this point.
No, we did not. This did not seem like a year where they would be 0 in anything. You'd figure, you know, at least they could start out on a high note, but
that's the way she goes.
But before we continue on with talking about specific teams and upcoming matchups, this is becoming kind of a tradition this season at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and that's updating everybody on the injuries around the league, because when you're talking about football, unfortunately, injuries are soon to follow.
I'd be curious to know if there's more this year than in the average year.
Everybody seems to think that this year that there are more injuries than in years past. But I also feel like that's a common thread every year, that people kind of forget the injuries that happened the year before, and each year it seems worse than the last. But it has been a pretty injury-plagued first 5 weeks of the NFL season here this year. The big one last week, of course, being Kansas City Chiefs running back Jamaal Charles tearing the ACL in his right knee. As we all know, in 2011, he tore the ACL in his left knee. And it didn't go well for the Chiefs after that point. They had 17 points by the time Charles got injured, did not score again in the game, and ended up losing to the Chicago Bears 18-17. This is not good news for the Chiefs. Their offense, you know, typically you'd think an offense runs through the quarterback, or the offense runs through a stud wide receiver, but for the Chiefs, for so long, it's been Jamaal Charles really being the cornerstone of this run first, you know, ball protecting, passing kind of offense. And when you look back to what happened in 2011, the Chiefs didn't turn away from being a run heavy team. They were a top five team when it comes to rushing attempts, but they were not in the top 10 when it came to rushing yards, which is something you can't, that isn't the case when you've got a healthy Charles in the mix. You know, you're top in attempts, your tops in yards, your tops in rushing touchdowns. So I have a feeling, you know, moving forward, we've got the Chiefs with one win at this point. You lose your star player on offense, and it's just going to be an uphill battle for the Chiefs moving forward.
Yeah, totally. You know, I know they have Nile Davis, and he's, you know, been there before when they've been without Jamaal Charles' services. And I know they weren't, you know, super pleased with what they
have.
Well,
that's why Charkhandrick West is the starter now.
That's where I was going with that. So now they got this Charkhandrick, which is definitely one of the more unique names in the league. We'll just have to see how he can fit the bill, or at least try to fill the shoes of Jamaal Charles. It's obviously going to be difficult, him being the he's a leader in something since like 2013.
The leader, the NFL's all-time leader in yards per rush at 5.5 yards per carry for all running backs who've had a minimum of career 1,000 touches.
That was the other thing I saw. It was the first one I was thinking. It was something that he leads like all current backs since 2013, and I don't know if it's yards from scrimmage or what. It's something like that.
But I think it's yards from scrimmage.
Regardless, he's been one of the, you know, top backs when he's healthy, and
it's one of the top backs in the NFL history when he's healthy.
Absolutely, and or statistically, that's definitely the case. It's, you know, with that offense being what it is, which is, let's just say that it's had a tendency to be considered lethargic at times.
Well, it's a different kind of passing game than your Aaron Rodgerses and even your
That's
Joe
a very
Flaccos.
polite way to say it. But yeah, they obviously they lack a little bit in their passing game, we'll say. And even though they got Jeremy Maclin this year, you know, we haven't seen, you know, that necessarily improve things all that much. You know, he's had a few catches here and there. I know they did finally get a touchdown from a receiver this year, but, you know, that shouldn't even be remarkable by any stretch. So, obviously, this was an offense that went through Charles, and it's obviously going to be affected by this. So, we'll just have to see how much. I mean, their defense is still solid. They do play in a rather tough division. It's really hard to say what this means for their hopes for the rest of the season.
Well, what I think it means, just because when you look at what happened in 2011, and granted that happened in week two, you know, the Chiefs went on to go 7-9 that year, and they did, again, like I said, stick with that run-heavy approach, and I expect that to continue with West and with Nile Davis, and if they sign Ben Tater, Pierre Thomas, who they worked out this week. But you're not going to get the same kind of results out of it, because you're talking about a guy like Jamaal Charles, who has managed to be the all-time yards per carry leader and never really been playing behind one of the top offensive lines in the league. He's been creating these yards for himself, and when you look at the Chiefs' offensive line this year, it's not a lot to write home about yet again. So you can't expect West and Davis and Tate and or Thomas, if they sign either of those two guys, to get those kinds of yards. They'll get those carries because that's just how this team is designed, but the yards aren't really going to be there. And I think that's going to be the big problem there, is that you're going to see some drives stall out. And when you're talking about this team only having one win at this point, it looks kind of bleak right now for the Chiefs.
Certainly doesn't look enviable, the position they're in.
In other news, Tyrod Taylor, the Buffalo Bills starting quarterback, injured his MCL while being horse collar tackled in week five. Looks like EJ Manuel could be getting the start this week. He took most of the snaps on Wednesday, but head coach Rex Ryan will not yet rule out Tyrod Taylor, which makes sense because you're talking about a team that's facing the undefeated Cincinnati Bengals this week. You want to keep the Bengals guessing in terms of game plan. Is it EJ Manuel? Is it Tyrod Taylor? You're talking about two quarterbacks with very different skill sets. But at this point, everybody's kind of thinking that it's relatively significant, the MCL injury that Taylor has suffered, to the extent where he's going to at least miss a week. So I would pencil in right at this point EJ Manuel is starting there, but that's a big bummer for the Bills, who got a real boost out of what Tyrod Taylor was doing at quarterback as compared to what we've seen in the past from EJ Manuel and his very obvious limitations. But they could be getting Sammy Watkins back this week. He hasn't played yet this season. He looks to be on his way there. So maybe whether it's Tyrod Taylor or EJ Manuel, they'll at least get a bit of a boost in that passing offense by having Watkins back out there.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll help to get another receiving threat out there, if you will. And you know, it's weird, the quarterback situation. I mean, we saw Tyrod last week basically struggle for three quarters, and then all of a sudden he's, you know, he had a couple big plays with his feet and scored a rushing touchdown, and you know, kind of got them back in the game and put him in position to win. And so yeah, that's sort of thing. You know, it's hard to say if any of that's going to have rubbed off on EJ Manuel, if maybe being able to sit for a bit and get different perspective on things will maybe help his, you know, development overall, or if he's just kind of a lost cause or what the situation is. So
right.
Definitely be an interesting one to watch how that works out, just to kind of get a feel for where he is and everything.
But something tells me that even if EJ Manuel gets the start this week, even if he looks good or decent, I don't think that once Tyrod Taylor is healthy that all of a sudden EJ Manuel is going to steal that job away.
No, I certainly wasn't intimating anything such as that. It was more just kind of like the question of where is
his development?
Where
at?
Is he in his development
Does
at this
Does he have
point?
Any
is
kind he, of future in the NFL?
Yeah, is he a lost cause at this point, or is this going to be a chance for him to show? Yeah, this will be if he plays Sunday, this will be a chance for him to show if he's a career backup or if he's potentially someone might want to take a shot on him in the future here.
Another major injury in the NFL. New England Patriots left tackle Nate Solder, he tore his biceps. He has been sent to injured reserve.
I don't know what it is about that injury, but God, does that just make me just cringe.
And there's always like two or three guys every year who deal with it, and you just go, ah.
Yeah, I
mean, well, that and the torn pectoral.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Because you're it's like ligaments and things like that. You tear those, you know what I mean? And those are awful injuries, and like they're harder to recover from. But it's so commonplace. I guess we're just kind of, inured to it at this point. But like with torn pectorals and torn bite, you're just thinking like,
Yeah, it just sounds terrible. The thing is, for a lot of other teams, when you look at someone's team's left tackle, being sent to IR at this point in the season, you go, oh, that's not good. But the New England Patriots, they just have, when you talk about next man up, they really handle that next man up situation quite well. I don't really expect all of a sudden that people are going to be teeing off on Tom Brady from his blind side because Solder isn't out there, because that's just not how it works with the Patriots. They'll figure out a way. I mean, obviously it's a big blow because this is a guy who is a veteran. He's a, established guy on this offensive line. But until I see it actually negatively affect Tom Brady, I can't possibly believe that it will.
I mean, you kind of have to think that it will.
It will have a negative effect, at least to some degree, because you're talking about a replacement-level player
at
left tackle.
Exactly. I mean, it can't have a positive effect, or you wouldn't think it could. And you certainly think there would be some sort of drop-off from whomever they had starting. But, no, I'm kind of with you in that, there's a lot of generic guys that play for New England that just – produce, and I don't know if potentially they're robots built in some facility owned by Gillette or something along those lines. Somehow it's Belichick cheating, I'm pretty sure.
Clearly when is it not?
But yeah, no, that'll be interesting to see how much that affects them, because they were they've certainly been rolling this year, and we saw more of that on Sunday against Dallas, it will be interesting to see if that kind of how much that really takes them down a gear at this point.
Before we get on to some more depressing injury news, let's do a little bit of uplifting injury news in terms of two quarterbacks who have been sidelined for the past couple of weeks. Let's start with Indianapolis Colts passer Andrew Luck. The latest on him is that he's, quote, headed in the right direction. The Colts take on the New England Patriots this week, so clearly they would love to have Andrew Luck out there under center. Of course, he's dealing with the partially separated throwing shoulder. They need him. Matt Hasselbeck is we'll call him a serviceable backup quarterback. I would say that he's better, even at 40 years old, than a lot of other backup quarterbacks around the NFL. But at the same time, this is a Colts team that can take this AFC South division if they want to, because it's kind of an up in the air division at this point. But because of the way things have gone with the Luck injury and the other issues that this team has on defense and the run game and things like that, a little bit iffy, but things are always better if you've got Andrew Luck out there, regardless if you're getting him killed behind a terrible offensive line or not. I'll tell you right now, I'm sure Andrew Luck wants, this is Colts Patriots. I mean, even if it's not Brady Manning 16 or 17 or whatever number we're on with Brady versus Manning, it's always a competitive and compelling matchup anytime the Colts and Patriots play, and you want to see Andrew Luck out there and not Matt Hasselbeck.
Yeah, I mean, I just
want to protect your young, expensive quarterback who you want there for the long term.
But yeah, you want to make sure you're not going to break him worse.
You're not going to completely separate
that
shoulder.
Yeah, exactly, and so they need to, make sure that he's at least healthy enough to go and fight through any pain that might be there or whatever. I'm sure he wants to get out there.
Of course.
He's the type of guy that would want to get out there if they're, regardless whether they're playing the Patriots or, I think Ben Davis is a high school in Indianapolis somewhere. pardon my reference if that's not correct. But obviously, he's going to be chomping at the bit get back out there. I'm sure the Colts want to get him back out there. But I will say, it has been fun watching the Indianapolis geriatrics over the last couple of weeks with Hasselbeck and Andre Johnson
and Frank Gore
and like this extremely old crew that has just been getting it done. Yes, against their AFC South compatriots, and that's proven to be less than convincing, I'd say, over the past few years. But at the same time, that's that's been the Colts' formula to success over those years.
Well, that's what you need to do anyway to get to the playoffs is sweep your division.
You got
to be able to do that.
Exactly.
Another good news about another quarterback in the AFC, that's Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. He wants to play on Sunday because the Steelers are hosting Bruce Arians and the Arizona Cardinals, and Arians, of course, was Ben's former offensive coordinator with the Steelers. Probably not going to be playing this week while they continue to manage his MCL sprain and bone bruise. But he did participate in about 12 or 15 non-contact 7-on-7 snaps today being Wednesday. So at least he's taking that step forward. He'll be evaluated basically on a day-to-day basis. He hasn't been cleared to do a lot of things. He's been jogging. But they still need to figure out about his lateral movement and things like that before he can be cleared for more practice work. But it is a sign that he's at least, if not ahead of, at least on schedule to come back from his injury. And while the Steelers did pull off quite the exciting victory over the San Diego Chargers on Monday night, Ben Roethlisberger is a little bit different than Michael Vick, just in the same sense that, Matt Hasselbeck, Andrew Luck. I mean, you want to have Andrew Luck out there. You want to have Roethlisberger out there. So both these quarterbacks at least getting closer to their returns, if not coming back this week in terms of Andrew Luck.
Yeah, that's a completely different offense with Ben running things, obviously.
Yeah. And Antonio Brown went into detail about that today, in fact.
I thought you were going to say he went into depression, but that was –
We'll call it frustrated.
I think that if they can get him on the field, obviously they want to do so as soon as he's able to do that without making things worse. But if not, maybe they can continue to get some contributions from him from the sideline, such as when he drew up the 72-yard pass on Monday night.
Yes, the touchdown pass to Marcus Wheaton.
Yeah, was that according to Le'Veon or somebody after the game? I think
Vic.
It was Le'Veon that said
Vic,
it.
Right?
Or maybe it was Vic. Frankly, if that was his first play call and they gave him that play call of that game, I think they should give him more, because I don't know what was going on in the first half of that game.
Yeah,
nothing
I mean,
made
there was
a
huge lack of trust in Vic's arm, which, I mean, he has a big arm and a good deep ball, and I understand the lack of trust in his arm when you're talking about trying to get the quick throws out that Ben Roethlisberger usually does. And when you look at Vic's, wind-up and delivery and all of that. But at the same time, man, he's a quarterback. Let him throw a little
bit.
That
guy's had a cannon since he was at Virginia Tech, and I just don't understand why you would wait until that part of the game to roll him out and let him heave it down the field. Whether or not he's going to hit anything is a whole other question.
But as long as he doesn't turn it over,
just
I guess
show
it's
the
all right.
Show the defense that you're not going to only throw the ball
right.
5 yards, and you're not going to just run Le'Veon Bell into a pile of bodies. It made zero sense to me, and then they finally did that, and I was like, oh, finally they do what I've been asking them to do all game, and then I find out after the game that it was Ben's call, so I don't know what was going on.
And back to some bad news. The Detroit Lions are 0-5, as we talked about, we mentioned a little bit earlier in the show. And things are getting a little bit worse for them now because DeAndre Levy is undergoing hip surgery. He's probably going to be headed to IR. He could be headed to IR recall, but at this point in the season and things being as they are for the Lions, I think injured reserve might be the landing point for him. This coming off of the heels of Matt Stafford being benched. There is no quarterback controversy, though. Jim Caldwell made it clear that it was just he was having a bad day, and you pull him like a pitcher having a bad day, and that Stafford's still the starter. So there's no worries there. But when you they didn't have Levy to start the season. He's dealing with, a hamstring or an ankle or something?
I think it's a hip.
Well, it's a hip now. He's getting hip surgery now.
No, I thought it was the same.
The hip the whole time?
I thought it was the same injury that he re-aggravated, because last week was the first he'd played.
Yes.
And he played for a couple series before he re-aggravated it. So, obviously,
well,
he wasn't ready to come back.
Surgery is in his future. And, he's a leader on that defense, and you could feel his presence missed earlier in the season, and now it looks like they might have to compensate for the rest of the year without him.
I mean, that's a defense that lost Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley and Levy to the injury since last year. And I think the lack of leadership on the field is something that's been very apparent in some of their struggles. At least on the defensive side of the ball. As for Stafford, I don't know what's going on here. I know that they're obviously not happy with what he's doing. They're supposedly Caldwell told him at halftime that if he throws another pick, he's going to bench him. And
even and then
that,
he did.
That seems very odd. Even
but then he did throw another pick.
I know.
And then he got benched.
I know, but I'm just saying that the way it went down, it's like the fact that he gave him the ultimatum of not throwing another one or he's going to get benched, and then he threw another one, and then he did get benched, and then sat there with a weird look on his face for the rest of the game. And I don't know. I read some very interesting things today. I can't remember the gentleman's name on Twitter. But basically, the gist of it was, it's kind of hard to argue with at this point, is that, you know, they made the shift to Joe Lombardi and when Caldwell came in at the beginning of last year.
Right.
And it's just not a good fit for the personnel. And that starts with Stafford. It doesn't end with him, but it starts with Stafford in that, you know, he's not just a short pass type of guy. And they're just also the types of plays they call, you know, their offensive line isn't necessarily best suited for that. There's just a lot of issues with that fit. And there's rumors that they had decided before the season that if they don't get what they want out of Stafford, they may move on from him at the end of the year. And that it's such a bitter as a someone who's been invested in the Lions for almost 30 years now. It's really frustrating to see this because we all know from watching years of the NFL how hard it is to find a quarterback and a quarterback that at least you want to stick with for a while. And I've been saying for at least the past year, I've heard some other Lions fans complain about Stafford and all this, and you know, they want to move on and all that. And my point is just like, well, where are you going with this? I mean, you're
going to where?
Yeah, unless you're drafting Goff first overall, because if he is come draft time what everybody says he is now, which is the best quarterback, and he's good enough to be drafted first overall, which I don't even know if that's the case. I don't know if anybody's even claiming that right now. But regardless, if he's the best quarterback and you end up drafting him, there's no guarantee that he's going to be as good as Stafford is. And
there's a 100% chance he's not going to be as ready away.
That's absolutely the case. So I mean, you got a guy that he's 26, 27 years old or whatever. He's obviously got the talent because that's been unquestioned since before he came into the league, that this guy can sling it all over. He's got the arm. And, you know, it's about what's going on upstairs. And he's really shown, at least from a month or month and a half into the season last year, he's really shown a regression since this Lombardi offense got forced upon him.
Yeah, so maybe it's just not the right fit for him. It's sort of like when you look at Joe Flacco a couple of years ago and Cam Cameron was the offensive coordinator and things were just not going really well and it wasn't a good fit for Flacco, for his arm, for that personnel. And then later in the season, they moved on from Cam Cameron, promoted Jim Caldwell, and then they have that great late season and postseason run that led them to, you know, win the Super Bowl, and for Flacco to throw 11 postseason touchdowns to zero interceptions. And it's just, and you could tell for so long that Cam Cameron wasn't the right fit for that offense. It's very predictable. It's very basic. It didn't really, you know, it didn't really suit what they had going on. And then once they moved on from that, they were able to get, you know, they were able to improve on the offense. And no one was yelling, get rid of Joe Flacco. They were saying that this coordinator is not the right fit. So I don't understand why it's get rid of Stafford, who's not.
That's exactly my point.
You should probably switch. You can find a coordinator that'll fit better than you can find more quickly than you can find a quarterback who's going
to
fit.
That's what's scariest to me.
And that goes for every team.
About looking at this situation, is that it sounds like Caldwell is stuck on Lombardi and he doesn't want to move on from him. And if anything, as a coaching group and maybe even with Mayhew involved, as a group, it sounds like they're basically closer to moving on from Stafford than from any of the coaches, and that's I don't know, that's just a very uneasy proposition to me.
Well, if that's their decision making process, I wouldn't be surprised if this team doesn't win a game this year. and one more quarterback note to talk about is Dallas Cowboys quarterback Brandon Whedon, who has been the starter in replacement for the injured Tony Romo while he recovers from his broken collarbone. The Cowboys are on bye in week 6, but when they come off of that bye, it is no longer Brandon Whedon as the Cowboys starting quarterback. It is now Matt Cassel. Brandon Whedon is, quote, pissed that he has been benched. Over his first two starts, the Cowboys while they lost all three games that he has started, did put up 28 and 20 points. But after Sunday's performance against the New England Patriots, in which the Cowboys lost 30-6, he threw one touchdown to two interceptions. That's it for Brandon Whedon and his questionable decision making. And I don't blame the Cowboys for it, only because, you know, you look at the 28 and 20 points and say, well, at least this offense can score some points when needed. But when you look at three losses in three starts, that's really what you know, you don't want to look at quarterback stats as wins and losses of quarterback stats. But sometimes when you're making a move from a guy like Romo to a guy like Whedon, you can kind of look at losses and say, well, here's how the quarterback factored into that. And all of these Cowboys games that I've watched with Whedon as the starter, it's like flashbacks to Whedon starting for the Browns. It's just you can see the footwork. You can see how slow he is, slow at reading the field, slow at his delivery, slow at throwing the ball, making decisions. And that's something that he hasn't been able to really work on and improve at. And so, you know, at least Matt Cassel, the new Kyle Orton of the NFL, who will never die as long as he wants to play, looks like he's going to be taking over. But every week we're getting closer to Tony Romo coming back. Once we're getting into November, we can start really talking about a real timetable to have him back on the field. He said to Tom Brady last week after the loss, you know, see you at the Super Bowl. And considering that all the teams in the NFC East all have, they're all 2-3 right now, anything really is possible for the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, that was kind of where I was going to go with things. Actually, I think the Giants are in first at 3-2.
3-2.
And but that.
Yes, because they beat the Niners.
Yeah, that of course, courtesy of that miracle win at the end of the Niners game. Or I don't know how much of a miracle it was. I kind of expected that to happen, but
yeah.
No, I mean I'm with you in that, you know, I look at Brandon Whedon and I see something similar to what I saw when he was in Cleveland, which is there's talent there. I mean, you can see him make some throws here and there.
He deserves to be in the National Football League. He just doesn't deserve to be a starter.
but he's not. He's a backup. And,
right.
But that's the question is, do you even have a backup if you have to play him for extended weeks? You know, what is a backup? Is a backup just a guy that comes in for a quarter while something's going on with a quarterback or fills in for one game? Or
is he a guy that you can believe you can turn to for 16 games if you have to?
Turn to for at least, we'll just say, an extended period of time, 3, 4, 5 weeks or whatever, you know, at least a big enough period that could potentially, you know, put your season in the tank. But that, you know, I think that's the most important thing here. Because what's Matt Cassel? Is he any better than Brandon Whedon? I mean, we'll see how it looks.
I think he's a little bit better than Brandon Whedon in some areas and not as good in others. You know, I think it's Brandon Whedon and Matt Cassel to me is sort of like the situation in Houston when you're talking about Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett, where it's so hard to, like,
they both have enough issues that it's kind of hard to figure out who you want to put out there.
Right. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if next week in week seven, you know, Matt Cassel gets the start and he gets pulled at some point in the game for Whedon, or they go back in week eight to Whedon. These things don't surprise me at this
point.
Well,
I mean, I think that's a special Houston thing where they just like to pull the quarterbacks whenever.
No, but that wouldn't surprise me, though, if that happened in Dallas.
I can't say. Nothing really would surprise me about that quarterback situation there in Dallas, so. But yeah, no, you said it best. This is the NFC East, and you know, you can kind of count on the rest of the league to win and lose games each week to the point where everybody's still kind of in the mix in a month.
Yeah, or at the division, not the league.
I'm sorry, the division. My apologies.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and we're going to come back with our Week 6 Minute Picks, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and it's time for our Week 6 Minute Picks.
Minute Picks.
Just a reminder, we've got four teams with bye weeks this week: the Dallas Cowboys, the Oakland Raiders, the St. Louis Rams, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Let's start, of course, on Thursday night. The Atlanta Falcons are at the New Orleans Saints in an NFC South matchup. Obviously, Thursday night's the kind of games where anything can happen. But the Saints haven't been that formidable team at home like they used to be. Whereas Atlanta, you know, they've had a couple of ups and downs this year, but they're still undefeated right now. And you know, Julio Jones expected to play, even though he's got a little bit of toe and hamstring issues. There's just a lot more going on for Atlanta. And I know this is a division rivalry. It's Thursday night. Weird things can happen, but I think that Atlanta can go into New Orleans and win. So I'm going to pick the Falcons.
I certainly think the Falcons can go into New Orleans and win, but
Will they?
Will they is the question, and honestly, I don't know. I'd expect this game to be, a pretty good fight. I think the Saints are gonna have this one circled. You know, this is especially as the season has developed. They know that Atlanta's is. I mean, even though Carolina's playing really well too, and also undefeated. I think either of those games they're going to look at and have it, you know, be ready to bring it, that sort of thing. They're at home. It's a night game. They still have Breeze. In Atlanta, I'm not going to say it's smoke and mirrors, but I'm not as convinced that they're a dominant team yet. And because they're undefeated, that's good for them, obviously. But, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily because they're killing everybody, you know what I mean? I'm going to go with the Saints here in an upset to start the week. Why not?
Moving on to Sunday and the early games. First up, Washington is at the New York Jets. Jets coming off of their bye week. I think the Jets are in a good situation here. You know, they've got Sheldon Richardson back from his suspension. That only makes that formidable defensive front even more formidable. You know, I don't trust Washington. I don't trust the pass protection. I don't trust Kirk Cousins. I don't trust the run game. I don't trust the decision-making on who's going to run the ball and when. And, of course, do not completely trust that Washington defense, which we don't want to talk smoke and mirrors. I think that early season Washington defense was kind of a smoke and mirrors situation. I'm going to go with the well-rested and ready New York Jets.
You said they're at home, correct? The Jets?
Jets are at home. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is definitely a Jets pick in my mind. I especially don't like this Washington offense going against this Jets defense. I think that's a bad matchup for Washington. I agree with
free
you.
Free RG3.
I agree with you that Washington.
Maybe not against this defense.
Their defense has looked a little better than maybe they should have thus far in the season.
Or we expected, not should have.
But I still think they're a pretty decent defense, but I think their defense is. Defense. I think their defense is decent. I think their offense is not even close. So, this is a Jets win in my mind.
Next up, Bruce Arians returns to Pittsburgh to face off his former team, the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's the Cardinals at the Steelers. Pittsburgh's got a really nice defense, especially up front, which is great because that secondary, you know, is not very good, which could pose some problems this week because nobody can stop Larry Fitzgerald all of a sudden, and not even some of the better cornerbacks in the NFL. You know, you got Mike Vick at quarterback for Pittsburgh. So we're going to be talking a lot about Le'Veon Bell again on Sunday, to be sure. I think Arizona is going to come into Pittsburgh and win. You know, I think the Steelers are going to be really wound up for Bruce Arians and all this stuff, but I like what Arizona's got on offense and on defense with Carson Palmer. If this was Ben Roethlisberger, I would say without a doubt the Steelers win, but because it's not, I'm going Cardinals.
I agree if Ben was in there that even if it was a hobbled Ben, then I'd pick the Steelers here. I'm a little less quick to go with Arizona here, and it's not because I don't think Arizona's good. I think Arizona's really good. I don't know this
the traveling east thing.
That's a little bit the Pittsburgh defense is just playing better than I expected them to this year, and
16 sacks.
And again, you're right. The secondary isn't really where it's shown up, but the front is playing, I think, playing better than a lot of people expected.
And Arizona definitely has offensive line question marks.
Right.
This is a tough one, though. I could really go either way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'll go with the Cardinals, and it's mainly just because how inept the Steelers looked in the first half last week, and I don't know how much of that
to fix that offensive play.
How much they're going to be able to fix, and can they stay in that game like they did against the Chargers? Because I don't think
Cardinals are a much better team.
Cardinals are a much better team than the Chargers, yes.
Next, we have the Kansas City Chiefs. They are at the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings as well coming off of a bye week. Kansas City is going up there. They do not have Jamaal Charles. They do have a good defense. But, again, they do not have Jamaal Charles on offense. Minnesota's got a good defense. Minnesota's got Adrian Peterson. And even a great defense, even if Kansas City's defense was playing as good as it possibly could, that still doesn't necessarily mean that they'll be able to contain Adrian Peterson. I'm going to go with the Vikings to win this game, especially with that Jamaal Charles injury looming over the Chiefs offense.
Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable in liking the Vikings here. They get that week off. They get the Chargers offense, which we talked about earlier, in that they're, nothing powerful, we'll say, at least through the air, and the run game has now taken a big hit. So I think this is just really good timing for the Vikings. It sets up well for them to get another win at home.
Next, the undefeated Cincinnati Bengals are at the Buffalo Bills. For sake of argument here, I am just going to assume that E.J. Manuel will be the quarterback for the Bills this week and not Tyrod Taylor. That being said, I think there are ways that Buffalo can get the better of Cincinnati this week, namely bringing pressure on Bengals quarterback Andy Dalton. The times that the Seattle Seahawks were capable of doing so last week, they did rattle Dalton quite a bit. But at the same time, the Bengals have a good defense in their own right. We're talking about E.J. Manuel because that's what I'm talking about here. And we're talking about, the Buffalo front might be able to mess with Andy Dalton a little bit, but when they can't, I mean, you've got Tyler Eifert, Marvin Jones, AJ Green, Mohamed Sanu, Jeremy Hill, Giovanni Bernard. There's a lot of weapons to guard against there, both in the passing and run game. So I think that the Bills are going to end up being a little bit overwhelmed, and I think that the Cincinnati Bengals can come into Buffalo and win.
Yeah, I probably would have a harder time with this if Tyrod was playing,
because he makes things a little bit
more
difficult.
And we are I'm going to go with you in the assumption that E.J. Manuel is starting. I don't have much confidence in E.J. Manuel to do that much at this point. I mean, I need to see it, that sort of thing. This Bengal team is on a roll right now. I won't pick against them until the night game. I'm not going to pick against them.
The night game is against the Browns, right?
This will be an early prediction on that. I'm taking the Browns.
Next, the Chicago Bears are at the Detroit Lions, with the Lions trying to get their first win of the season. And guess what, guys? I think they do it. I think that what happened last week with the benching of Matthew Stafford, I think it's going to at least get guys a little bit more focused on what's happening on the field. The lack of leadership, the kind of everybody looking kind of lost out there, that's been a big problem with the lack of execution. I don't think that they're going to let this Bears team, which isn't any good, to be honest, not very good team. Detroit, when pound for pound, talent level to talent level, they've got the greater talent, I think. So I think Detroit will finally get this win. They're at home. They need it. It's the Bears. I'm not really afraid of the Bears, so I'm going to go with the Lions.
Well, you're right. They need it.
They clearly need it because they don't have one yet.
And I when I first looked at the schedule for the Lions this year, I said, man, it's brutal to start. There's a possibility they could be 0-5, and the Bears game should at least be that first win in that terrible situation. I'm going to backtrack on that, though, and say that I think they're going to go to 0-6 here. They're a complete mess right now, and I think that what happened last week is not going to be anything that they're just going to be able to snap out of. I think this is the type of thing that's going to sit with them for a while here. And, they're right now – this isn't about talent. This is about how this team is playing. This is about how personalities are getting along in the locker room, both within, really between the coaches and the players. And this could turn out to be bad. I don't necessarily think they're going to go winless this year, but I could see a 2-3 win season here easy if this continues. And I think it very well could. This Bear team has been playing a little bit better lately.
Next, we have a very intriguing contest in my eyes. We got the Denver Broncos traveling to Cleveland to take on the Browns. Last week, the Oakland Raiders kind of pushed that Denver team to its limit. We got a low-scoring game between those two teams, and it was very intriguing to watch it come down to the wire. You know, Denver's got a really, really, really good defense, and I think they're going to need it because when you look at Josh McCown, slowly but surely, he's kind of looking like the Josh McCown of that five-game stretch with the Bears. He threw for 475 yards last week, two passing touchdowns, one rushing touchdown, and no interceptions. This is the first time a quarterback the NFL has ever done that. The offense there is going really well, but again, you know, this is a high quality defense, and so I'm kind of curious about how they're going to handle that, especially because you're talking about Peyton Manning, you're talking about a pretty, you know, pretty decent Denver run game when they can get going against the Cleveland defense that can't really stop the run nor the pass. I am going to go Denver, but I could see Cleveland winning this game. I could see this turning into some bizarro shootout kind of thing. But when you look at the quality of the defenses, I'm just going to go with Denver's defense.
And you would be, you know, justified by doing so.
I'm not entirely comfortable with that,
I
but
think
we're going
this
to
is,
go with
I
it.
think this is, like you said, I think this is one of the more interesting games this week.
And the Browns are hyped, man. They beat the Ravens last week for the first time since 2007 in Baltimore.
They've really played well the last 2 weeks, with both of those weeks being on the road. They're going to come home and get some home cooking, if you will. And you know, we saw them against Tennessee, granted, do that in the second week and get that win and play really well at home.
Sure, it's a rookie quarterback, but
I think they slept a lot during that Raider game, and it took them too long to wake up, and they were, you know, too far behind at that point. I could see them hanging in this game at the. I think they're going to be in it to the end if they don't win. I guess I'll go with you. I'll lean Denver just because their defense is really good,
Yeah,
and they have
I'm leaning
Peyton,
Denver because of that
and
defense.
they have Peyton against the Browns secondary, which we've, you know, at length talked about on this podcast as not quite what they were last year. So, but yeah, I'm with you. I won't be surprised if that's a real fun game to watch and Cleveland even pulls it out.
Next, Houston Texans are at the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is a good one for me for Jacksonville. I don't like that Houston quarterback situation at all. I don't like what's going on there. The defense is not getting home at all right now. They're just like leaning on Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt. And when you got 11 guys on defense, you know, and nine of them are relying on the other two, you're not really going to get things done that way. You know, I know Jacksonville fans are kind of worked up right now, and this would be a heartbreaking loss considering the quality of this Houston team. But I just don't see Houston being able to go on the road in the division and get this win. I don't have any confidence in the Texans right now.
This is such a weird game.
It is
And
weird because it's hard to have confidence in the Jaguars
it's
either.
hard to
But
have
when I look at
confidence
these
in
two
it's
lined
hard to
up
have
against you,
confidence
matched
in
up.
either team,
Yeah.
because Houston has given us nothing to believe in. They have one win, correct? And
Yeah.
I believe it's against Tampa,
Yeah.
and they fought to get that win. There was
Yeah,
they
and
were Tampa
Tampa's
was in it until
not
the third
good.
quarter, deep into the third quarter. And we've seen Jacksonville. They get, you know, the Buccaneers. They get the Colts without Luck. They get, you know, they've had these games that and they've even like played okay in these games where they're making plays and Bortles looks okay and you know it's I don't know. It's kind of hard to put your finger on why the Jaguars keep losing, and it's pretty easy to put your finger on why Houston keeps losing, and so they're going to
Well,
play.
Houston doesn't have a quarterback.
That, well,
That's
that,
one of them.
that's a and they don't have much of a secondary either.
No.
And oh man, how is this thing going to go? I expect the Jaguars to look okay,
But how and
and
how's the O-line going to hold up? Blake Bortles and J.J. Watt.
yeah, is he going to be alive at the end of the thing? You know, and I don't know. I gotta pick one. I'll take the home team.
Sure.
I don't know. What a weird game.
Next, we have the Miami Dolphins coming off the bye week with new head coach, or interim head coach, we shall say, Dan Campbell, and a new defensive coordinator as well, heading towards Tennessee to take on Marcus Mariota and the Titans. You know, if there's ever a chance where Ndamukong Suh and this revamped Miami front seven could ever get home, it should be against a rookie quarterback like Mariota. But Mariota's playing extraordinarily well, especially for a first-year quarterback, especially with this Titans team that I really didn't have any expectations for going into this season. I don't think that a change in head coach and a bye week is going to do that much for Miami to go on the road against the Titans, to be quite honest. I'm not really feeling it with Miami. I want to see what they look like with this new coach telling them what to do and yelling them at the sidelines before I determine that things are turning around for them. So I'm going with the home team Titans.
Well, if Philbin's personality was the problem, you know, they do have pretty much the exact opposite in Dan Campbell.
That's true.
Here. They should be a more talented team Sunday. This is another weird game. Tennessee's at home. That should help them. They've looked pretty good at home this year. Especially at home this year. But Miami's rested coming off that bye week. They have a whole new perspective with a different guy yelling at them. I'm going to buy into the first week. He kind of gets them all to say, okay, we're past that. We're just going to really go out there and put it down today. I don't know that I'm going to buy it for the rest of the season, but I'll buy it for Sunday.
So Dolphins for you.
Dolphins.
We have three late afternoon games. They start with the Carolina Panthers, the undefeated Carolina Panthers, going to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. It's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, Carolina, they don't have the formidable defense that they had in years past, but it's still quite good. And they don't have the passing game that they had in years past because of injuries. But Cam Newton is still finding ways to get things done. They've got a really strong run game. Of course, we know all about Seattle. You know, the passing game is kind of weird because they're not getting Jimmy Graham involved enough as a receiver. They want him to block, even though that's not what he does best. They're getting Marshawn Lynch back. They anticipate to have him back and be their starting running back. Probably see a little Thomas Rawls here and there, but not as much as, you know, we have in the past couple weeks without Lynch being healthy or on the field. This game is in Seattle. Seattle's coming off of that overtime loss in Cincinnati last week. They really want to make statements, and they're failing. But when they're at home, can they make that statement against this undefeated team? I think so. I'm going to go with Seattle.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, this is an intriguing matchup.
Very intriguing matchup.
Carolina playing really well. They're coming off a bye.
This is Seattle, like the matchup I wanted to see 2 years ago.
Yeah, Seattle's been, you know, they're just kind of not what they were. You know, they look to be pretending a little bit at this point.
Yeah, and Cam Chancellor, he ends that holdout and comes back and is a liability in the secondary.
At times, he's played well too. It depends on, you know, whom they were playing, I think. But
Cincinnati will make it tough on anyone.
Exactly. So. You know, they're at home. Carolina's getting Kuechly back. Seattle's getting Marshawn Lynch back. You know, Seattle's had issues with their O-line.
They have.
You know, the defense.
And obviously the front seven of Carolina is their defensive strength.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I could see Carolina going up there and making, like, a statement win for them for the season and all that. But I can see that, but I'm not going to pick it. I'll go with Seattle.
Next, we have San Diego Chargers. They are at the Green Bay Packers in Green Bay. It's hard to pick against the Packers right now. Everything's going so well for them. You know, San Diego, they've got some high points, obviously. They got Antonio Gates back from his four-game suspension on Monday. And they were getting the ball to him, and he looked like he could handle that workload. Danny Woodhead, Keenan Allen, Ladarius Green. You know, they've got guys out there. And, of course, Todd Gurley running the football. But it's... We say this every time a team this season that a team's playing Green Bay. It's the Packers. It's in Green Bay. It's Aaron Rodgers. And I can't pick against that until I have a reason to do so, and I don't. So Packers win.
I was real impressed with the cornerback that came back for the Chargers on Monday.
Verrett.
Yeah, he looked really good.
He's very good.
Holding down AB. And so that was definitely a plus for them. We've seen them, you know, they've had a lot of injuries, especially on the O-line and in that secondary. Obviously, they got him back, like I said. I think this is a situation where San Diego can be fully healthy, have everybody 100%, and I don't know that I'm going to think that they're going to go up to Green Bay and win.
Exactly. And finally, in the late afternoon slate on Saturday, the Baltimore Ravens are at the San Francisco 49ers. The Ravens at 1-4 in last place in the AFC North. It's the worst start they've had in franchise history, and it's the worst defense they've ever had in franchise history. They spent this week making a lot of changes on that defense, particularly in the secondary, cutting cornerback Rashawn Melvin, had another cornerback placed on IR, signing Sharice Wright, promoting Asa Jackson, and amongst other moves, trying to get that defense right. And I think they can get that defense right, especially against the San Francisco offense that, quite frankly, isn't scaring anybody. But again, this is a Baltimore offense that, quite frankly, isn't scaring anybody. I want to pick a tie here. This is a weird game. I think Baltimore can go into San Francisco and win, but then you look at last week, and Baltimore was in a situation where the Browns are coming to town and like they should be able to win this game, and then they didn't. So I don't know what to
You're make. Really tossed.
I'm really it's a toss up for me. Like, flip a coin. I'm going to go with the coin. I'm flipping a coin in my head. Niners. I don't know.
Well, I think this...
I can't. This is... It's like such a cop-out. Like, we're making picks, and I can't pick, but I can't pick.
Not necessarily. I mean, it's not easy to make these picks, and just because a lot of this is who the hell knows, you know? But, I mean, I think this game could be subtitled Who's the Bigger Mess right now, because they both have some extreme issues going on.
At least Baltimore's got Flacco and a Harbaugh as a coach, as compared to a Kaepernick and a Tom Sula.
Yeah, they got rid of their Harbaugh. I trust the Ravens to be able to do it more than I trust San Francisco to do it right now.
Yeah.
And what I mean by do it, I mean kind of straighten out their mess. And I think this is a week and an opponent that the Ravens can do that against, where San Francisco, I don't know that they're going to do that.
Fair enough. I flipped a mental coin and went San Francisco, but I don't
could be exactly right,
because
that defense still plays tough in San Francisco. They could give we've seen Baltimore struggle offensively, and so that could really give them a tough time. I mean, I guess I'm kind of thinking that Baltimore is going to win this game 3-0.
I wouldn't be surprised. Sunday Night Football. The New England Patriots are at the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts, of course, we talked about earlier, trying to get quarterback Andrew Luck back this week for this big matchup. Over the past 10 years, essentially 10 plus years, been a marquee matchup in the National Football League. I think even if Andrew Luck comes back here, though, with those issues on offensive line, with these issues running the ball and all of that, I don't think that they can do enough offensively to match the Patriots or defensively to stop the Patriots. So I am going to go with New England.
Whew. I don't know.
You really think they can do enough offensively to beat the Patriots?
I kind of feel like if Luck comes back and he's good enough to go, that they can find a way to win this game.
Because they can put together some magic.
It's in Indy, right?
It's in Indianapolis.
I was going to say, I won't say this at all if it's not in Indy. If it's in Indy, Luck gets back, I think that they might be able to cobble themselves a win. And I'm not sure exactly what it is. It might be something about Luck. You know, Luck had a rough start. He's now had two games to, like, sit there and watch somebody else play, and they've won those games. And I don't know, he's going to come out with a kind of just a different focus on this season, at least. And
but it's not all Luck here. We're talking about the offensive line.
I know. I understand all that. I'm just saying that I think that as a team, they're going to be fired up. It's the Patriots. They're at Sunday night. They're at home. I mean, this is their chance to show, you know, that sort of thing. Get back at those, you know, for the deflating that caused them to lose by 50 points or whatever. You know, regardless, I'm saying that
I use that D word.
I think Indy can get it together with Luck at the helm. If Hasselbeck's there, I don't know that they're going to be able to do it. But I don't feel strongly. I don't have a lot of conviction in this pick. Obviously, the Patriots are hard to pick against, but I'll go with Indy with Luck.
And finally, Monday Night Football, because we can't escape the NFC East in prime time. It's the New York Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles.
It'll be done in about a week or two.
Let's just toss another coin in the air here. I'm going to go with the Philadelphia Eagles. The New York Giants have played okay. You know, they've nearly coughed up. Every time they've won, they've nearly coughed it up. Like, they've coughed up all every time they've lost this year. But I'm going to go with the Eagles because I'm going with the home team, and it's the NFC East, and it's Monday night. And that's basically it. And, like, I don't know what else to say about this division at this point, except, like, everybody's going to have pretty much the same record by the time that it ends. So that means that the Giants have to lose this game so that the Eagles can move up, but the Giants and Eagles can have the same record. So I'm going to go with the Eagles.
Yeah, that was exactly my rationale, was the Giants just took the division lead.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense to me that they'll lose next week and let Philly take that lead. And then it'll just be, you know, this carousel – you know, until Tony Romo comes back, and then, like, maybe Dallas will be a thing.
Yeah.
So we got done with that one early.
We got done with that one early. Right. Well, then that concludes our week 6 minute picks here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. Like we say every week, do with them what you will.
Yes.
Such as burn them or put them in a trash compactor.
Or
take them with a grain of salt.
Hey.
Literally.
Write them down on paper and then recycle that paper.
Them.
We're earth-friendly at the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Well, that means that we're almost done with this here podcast, so we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to send it on out of here. So just stay tuned for a few more minutes. We are back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, concluding what is our week 5 wrap-up / week 6 preview here at the 2015 NFL season. It's been an entertaining one here thus far.
Absolutely.
As it always is, because it's the National Football League, and how can you not be entertained?
Well, that's a whole discussion.
Well, you can also be disappointed.
That's a discussion for the offseason, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, and there's all the, you know, there's D'Angelo Williams, who started the whole October pink thing but can't wear a piece of pink all year long to honor his mother, who passed away from breast cancer. And there's the fact that Cameron Hayward, also of the Pittsburgh Steelers, had a tribute to his father, former NFL player himself, on his eye black, and he got fined for it.
Whose
father died from cancer. So
you can't write Ironhead on your
eye black.
No,
you can't write anything on there.
You can't write your dad's nickname on your eye black. That makes sense.
That's the rule started with Tim Tebow, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding you.
Which that didn't make any sense either.
No, that didn't make any sense either. So, you know, there are disappointing, frustrating, and a lot of non-fun things about the no-fun league. And
yeah.
And we'll get to that. We have a lot of things to complain about this year. Maybe we'll do that at the halfway point. We'll
gripes?
Gripes and mid-season
airing of the grievances?
Yes. But until then, and until next week, when we'll be back here at this here podcast, I am Andrea Hengst. I am the host of the F-Ball NFL podcast. I cover the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns at BleacherReport.com, the entire National Football League at SportsOnEarth.com and TheSportsDaily.com, and the Browns and a little bit of AFC North at Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. You can also find me on Twitter at F-Ball Andrea. That's F-B-A-L-L _ Andrea.
And I'm Brian Still, and I am the co-host of this F-Ball NFL podcast, as well as the producer of the podcast and the, we'll throw another one in today, the editor of the podcast.
The editor of the podcast.
I do edit, so.
That is true.
And I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
As always, we thank each and every one of you for tuning into the F-Ball NFL podcast this week. Be sure to join us next week and every week, because we like to talk about football, and I heard you guys like to watch and listen about football. So
yes.
I think it's like a pretty good match or something.
It sounds right to me.
So enjoy the week 6 games, everybody, and we'll be back next Wednesday.
Later.
Peace.